The signature tune from the Broadway musical Jekyll and Hyde, sung by our guest in the neighborhood this 10th anniversary morning. His name is Robert Cuccioli. You've seen him on Broadway in Jekyll and Hyde. You've also seen him off-Broadway in And the World Goes Round with Candor and Ebb. He was also in that very, very fine revival of Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well. And the, you know, he's into those long titles, I suppose. But he's in a fairly short title now. He's on Broadway in Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, playing the Green Goblin. But we're casting a bright spotlight on Robert Cuccioli and welcoming him to the neighborhood. Hi, Robert, how are you doing?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great, and it's wonderful to hear from you. And
thank you. Nice to be on the show.
Well, thank you so much. And how is Spider-Man doing? I know the audiences are packing the place. How does it feel to be going into this monster, you know, hit, and also this show that had all this press going on? You know, what's it feel like?
It's pretty spectacular. I mean, I had never I didn't get a chance to see Spider-Man before this,
mm-hmm.
So I didn't. No, all I had to go on was what the, you know, what the rumors were, what the press was. I certainly heard about, you know, their trials that they went through in putting the show up. But I had no idea what to expect. And just getting to know the, first of all, after I got cast in this show, I did see it. And I was pretty blown away by the spectacle. It's enormous. It's an enormous blockbuster. It's the visuals are stunning, and it's an exciting, fun show. And I was so excited about doing it. And Norman Osborn and the Green Goblin are just they're phenomenal roles. And I'm having a blast doing it. And the cast is great. The crew is terrific. All the issues that they dealt with in the initial stages of the show have all been ironed out. It's the safest show on Broadway, I think.
Has anybody even gotten a paper cut since you've been in the show?
No, not really. They double, triple, and quadruple check everything, and they really take safety as a high priority there.
Now, the other question, since you went to see the show before you were in it, is Patrick Page was playing the Green Goblin before you took the role, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I remember seeing him and thinking, wow, that was one of the most fun things in the show. He had a lot of fun with that role. But he has a very particular comic style. And I'm wondering how you were able to avoid being influenced by what he was doing in the role and make it your own.
Well, you know, I think anybody who replaces someone else has a certain challenge. You need to stay within the parameters of the show. And also, you know, I saw Patrick's performance, and I'm like, okay, I like that. I like that. I can use that. I can use this. And gleaned from him what I could. And then I went off on my own and worked on it. And I have to say that the staff, the director, Phil McKinley, and the stage management team, and the music director, Kimberly Grigsby, have all been so open with me to interpret the roles the way I would. And like I said, coming into replacing somebody else, it's difficult because you're a different person than the person that's playing the role. And I have different sensibilities, different personality. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to approach it slightly differently. So there are, I'm sure, similarities to our approaches, but I think we're both very different in what our characters have come out to be.
And gotta ask this question, like when you come off the stage after doing Spider-Man, do you feel like, you know, you've been playing an arch villain sort of super, does that carry over at all into your everyday life? Do you come home to your wife and suddenly be like, get me my Cheerios now or something like that?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I've been one that generally can hang up a character after a performance. I don't I don't normally bring my work home with me.
Cool. Well, we're talking with...
Unless it's particularly stressful, and then, you know, the stress will come home with me, but not the character itself.
Interesting. When you say the stress of doing a big show like this, or just your stress of the day in general?
Yeah, the stress of a big show. I mean, it's a lot of responsibility. And the stress of the day itself and you know, other, you know, stresses in the business or whatever, that I can carry with me. I have a tendency to do that sometimes, but not the roles in general.
Well, it's funny because what you were known for up until, like, Jekyll and Hyde was doing these off-Broadway reviews with not a whole bunch of sets and scenery and costumes and stuff. And I'm wondering, when you get to the point where you're on stage and acting and singing a big song, does everything else go away and you just become character singing song? Or is it so different in a show like Spider-Man than it was when you were singing the songs of Candor and Ebb or Jacques Brel?
Well, you know, you can't lose who you are. I mean, you certainly get involved in the, or I get involved with the characters and embody them as much as I can, or they embody me. But every day they're a little different because I'm a little different every day. Whatever happened during the day is going to sort of find its way within my performance a little bit.
Can you give a recent example of, like, when you were doing something as the Green Goblin and you felt a certain way that morning or whatever and it carried over?
Well, it could be that, you know, I'm very thoughtful one day and I have a lot of things weighing on me, and so my performance may be a little weightier than on another day where I've just been having a great day and laughing and everything's been going well and just I'm in a lighter mood. You know, the lines and everything else are all the same, but your energy level may be a little different, so you approach things a little bit differently, you react a little differently.
Yeah.
It's probably nothing that a layperson would ever see the difference, but I can tell the difference.
Right. And you speak of you know, the stress of the day of coming off the stage. What do you do to, what are your rituals, if any, before going into a performance? Do you have a warm-up? Do you have a... What do you do?
Yeah, they vary depending on the show. Spider-Man is vocally demanding as far as speech-wise. The character of the Green Goblin is demanding vocally. So I make sure I warm up very well. I warm up a couple of times during the day.
Wow.
It's physically demanding, so I make sure that I do a lot of stretching in my dressing room beforehand, and, you know, physical activity. I work out and things like that during the day also. So, yeah, I have a bit of a routine, and it changes with the role, with the show.
Now, the thing people might not know about our guest, Robert Cuccioli, because he seems so cut out to be an actor. He sings, he's got the stage presence, he's got the good looks, is that you started in finance. How did you make the switch? You know, how did you end up going from being essentially a Wall Street shark or shark wannabe to being the Green Goblin and all the other things that you played?
Well, I mean, I can give you the Reader's Digest version.
Sure.
It's because it's quite a long story. But I started out, you know, never intending theater to be a passion or being a career. I never even really thought of it as a career.
Most people can't. Yeah.
I came from a middle class family and from Long Island, and I was destined to work on Wall Street and had aspirations of becoming a corporate lawyer. But I did theater in high school, community theater, and theater in college just for fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until my senior year of college that I was doing a show, going for my finance degree, and people said, you know, you're good. Did you ever think of doing this as a career? And that's sort of when the light bulb went off.
What show and was it, by the way? What show?
I was actually doing Godspell.
Ah, yeah. Were you Jesus, or were you one? Okay.
Pardon me?
Were you Jesus or one of the disciples, or who were you in the...
Yes, I was actually auditioned for the role of the Judas role, but I ended up getting Jesus for whatever reason.
Dude!
So,
you must have had long hair and a beard back then. Okay.
No, I didn't, actually. I don't know how that happened, but whatever.
Okay, so they said, hey, a light bulb went off, and?
Yeah, and I decided that, you know, if I don't give it a try, I'll say what if all my life. And, but meanwhile, I had this degree, so I started, I got a job at E.F. Hutton, which was, many people don't even know what that is now, but it was a big financial firm back in the 80s, one of the biggest, and worked for them down on Wall Street. And on my lunch hours, I'd go up and, you know, do auditions and slide pictures under the door of, you know, all that stuff. And I knew nothing about the business. I knew nobody in it and knew no way of how to get involved in it. And then a friend of mine who I worked with in community theater had another friend who was a costume coordinator, designer, for the Light Opera of Manhattan, which doesn't exist anymore. But it was a repertory company in Manhattan that worked 52 weeks out of the year doing operettas, Gilbert and Sullivan, Lehar, Strauss, Romberg, all those things. Mm-hmm. So I auditioned for them, and I got a job in the chorus. So making $35 a week.
Wow.
So I would
still more than I make
I would
now.
Work on Wall Street during the day, travel uptown, and do theater at night. And I did this for a year and a half, both things, until I couldn't do it anymore because I was getting roles in the company and I had to rehearse with them more often. And so I quit Wall Street and started on, you know, the course of acting, and my parents cried.
Did they? Well, you were old enough at that point. It's not like you were 15 and you said, Mom, Dad, I want to go to college and be an actor. This was already, you were in your
20s. Yeah, no, I was in my mid-20s.
Yeah. But was there a point when you were eating, you know, rice-a-roni every night and ramen noodles? Or, you know, were you living with your parents? Was that helpful?
Well, I lived with them I lived with them when I just started out, working on Wall Street. But then I got an apartment with two of the other guys that I worked with.
Cool.
And we had a place on the Upper East Side. So I've lived in Manhattan ever since.
Well, and just back then, for the help of having two other people help pay the rent, I guess it was basically manageable. When did you get that first break higher up than Loom after Light Opera of Manhattan? When, you know, what was the next step?
My first big break was when I got cast as in Camelot with Richard Harris.
Oh my
the
God.
The tour.
Richard, I got to ask, how nuts was he?
You know, he was pretty phenomenal. He either loved you or he hated you. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, he loved both me and the Guinevere. And I had a great relationship with him. I adored the man. He was pretty wacky, though. He was pretty out there. And, you know, part of my job was to entertain him on stage.
Oh.
So I would have to, that was part of the stresses of the career, is, you know, having to make up things that might entertain Richard.
Could you remember
anything?
But
I had a good time with him, and it was a great learning experience, and that was my first big break.
Well, wait. We can't just leave it at that. I want some examples. Like, either what did you do to entertain him, or do you have any Richard Harris anecdotes of insane or weird things that he did?
Well, I remember we played Wolf Trap, which is a huge outdoor arena in Vienna, Virginia, and I don't know, it was sometime in the summer, and there was this enormous June bug that was invaded the scene that I had with Richard, and I took my sword out and started having a battle with it.
That's cool.
And ended up killing the June bug. And so that was that took up some some delight in Richard.
Hey, one thing I want to ask Robert Cuccioli, who is our guest here in the neighborhood, is that HBO at one point, or one of the cable channels, showed the Richard Harris tour of Camelot. Are you the Lancelot in that old video? You're not. Oh, okay, sorry.
No, that's probably Richard Mewins.
I think you're right. Yeah. Who, by the way, that's an interesting name, because was he in The World Goes Round also, or was he in Closer Than Ever, the original one of that?
Was probably in Closer Than Ever.
Cool. Well, let's get to And the World Goes Round, which is one of the first places people really discovered you outside the realm of, or at least in New York. So how did you get that Candor and Ebb role, and what was that like, being part of that company?
I auditioned for it, like you know, most actors do for just about everything, and it was a great experience. I mean, I developed long-lasting friendships with the rest of my cast members: Karen Ziemba, Karen Mason, Jimmy Walton, Brenda Presley.
Cool.
It was a great time. We had a lot of fun. It was a great show. It was very inventive. Susan Stroman's staging and choreography was just brilliant. You know, and that was the beginnings of Susan Stroman. You know, she
went on to do the producers
shortly after that.
Yeah,
can I ask with her specific style. Yes, it was a great experience.
And did you learn anything working with or doing the songs of John Kander and Fred Ebb?
Did I learn anything from working with two of them?
Yeah.
They were both just really great, generous. Well, Fred Ebb was. I mean, John is still with us, thankfully. They're both just generous, dear, wonderful men. And I don't remember anything specific that they imparted to me as far as what I learned. But they were very generous and giving and supportive with you know, our approaches to everything.
And what about from Stroh, as I like to call Susan Stroman, though I've never met her, but did she teach you anything about where you are on stage or movement or dance or whatever?
Well, you know, I'm not really a dancer per se, but I worked with Stroman a couple of times prior to that. I worked with her at Paper Mill. Mm. So she's great because she knows how to make people look their best and to build choreography on people to their talents. So she always made me look great with whatever I needed to do, and I had to do a dance number, Arthur in the Afternoon, with Karen Ziemba, which was one of the highlights of my life. So I still remember that. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. We're talking, by the way, with Robert Cuccioli. He is a Broadway and off-Broadway actor, as we've been hearing, certainly. Now, the next big leap forward in your career was in the Broadway premiere of the Frank Wildhorn musical Jekyll and Hyde. And so...
prior to that, I did Les Miserables. So that was my first Broadway debut. That was my Broadway debut.
Yeah. Well, you weren't the original Javert, but you came into... Les Mis as a
no, I was yeah. No, I came into that later, and then Jekyll and I left Les Mis to do Jekyll and Hyde.
Were you a little worried when you first got? I mean, now that you're doing Broadway, so okay, you've got Les Mis and it's Javert, and it's a big Euro kind of musical, and then you go into Jekyll and Hyde, which is another Euro. Do you worry that maybe that on some level typecast you as doing a certain kind of Broadway show and a certain kind of music, and then
no,
good, okay, cool.
No, I never. Worried about that at that time. I was concerned with it after Jekyll and Hyde, but not before that. It didn't even cross my mind.
After J&H, I mean, did you feel that sometimes you were being typecast as, oh, well, he'll do these big Euro musical gotho things?
No, it wasn't that he'll do these things. It's just that, can he do anything else?
Mm.
You know, so that's the... things. That's the issue with being, you know, an actor, and it's always, you get stigmatized by what you just did sometimes.
Yeah. And
people can tend to forget what you your other talents are. And so you have to constantly reinvent yourself and constantly remind people what you do.
Exactly.
Or what you can do, and your how wide your range is.
Now, can I ask, speaking of stigmas, Frank Wildhorn was a guest on my radio show a couple of years ago. Nice guy. Talked to him. Why do you think he just has had no real success on Broadway? Well, I mean, Jekyll and Hyde ran a long time, but it did not make money. And then every other show that he's done, good, bad, or in the middle, just has not clicked. Why can't he get that break?
I don't know. And it kind of eats at me that issue also, because I respect Frank very much, and I think that he's an enormously talented composer. And I see no reason as to why this is happening, especially, you know, just recently with Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
I was there at the opening, and I saw a lot of good in that show. And I thought it was some of the best music that he's written and some of the most varied that he's written. And I was very excited for him. And then it really got pummeled. He really got a really bad rap on that one. And I resent the criticism that he had to endure.
Well, I
don't understand it at all.
Yeah,
honestly.
I mean, he was pummeled worse on Wonderland than some of the earlier shows, but he didn't get the money.
He was,
reviews.
But I didn't get to see Wonderland, yeah. So I can't say from an objective, you know,
sure.
viewpoint on that.
But you saw Bonnie and Clyde, so you
I
could
saw Bonnie
there
and Clyde, and,
right.
and I don't, yeah. I didn't see what the critics had to say. They didn't. He didn't deserve that.
Now, I guess the good news for Frank Wildhorn is that Jekyll and Hyde is apparently coming back this season. It'll be playing on Broadway in spring. You've directed Jekyll and Hyde, you know, regionally.
A number of times, yeah.
Yeah, so do you have any thoughts on there being a new Broadway Jekyll and Hyde?
No. You know, I'm anxious to see what they do with it. I know Constantine. I'm anxious to see, you know, his interpretation of the role. I know he's going to sing the hell out of it.
Constantine Maroulis, by the way, is whom Robert Cuccinelli is referring to. He was in, well, he came to fame in Rock of Ages, right? Or something like that.
He was. And I also worked with Constantine and Jacques Brel. He came in for a short amount of time.
Cool. I'm wondering, and I have to, since you're still, you know, have that youthfulness, even though I guess you must be over 50 at this point, but I'm wondering, was there something in you that said, ooh, you know, I guess I could go back and do the role again, and I kind of wish I were? Or is it something that's like, oh, okay, it's time for them to do another Jekyll and Hyde?
I'm sorry, Dave, you're a little garbly. I have to repeat that.
Sorry. Let me get a little closer to the mic. I'm asking, like, when you heard that there was going to be another revival on Broadway of Jekyll and Hyde, was there a piece of you that said, ooh, maybe they'll call me again? Or is it past the time now where, you know, you need to give the torch away to someone else?
Oh, no, I had no desire to do it again.
Just wondering.
No, I'm very content with having, you know, someone else do it. I had thoughts of maybe directing it, but, you know, then I found out that Jeff Calhoun is directing it. I'm like, oh, that's a great choice. He's terrific. So,
cool.
But no, I had no intention of going, no wish of doing the role again.
Now, in terms of your career, one of the interesting things about Robert Cuccioli's, I guess, more than 20-year-old New York theater career is that it has been mostly New York theater. You have done some TV, you've done some soap opera work. Haven't really done much in the way of movies or sitcoms or other stuff. Was that an intentional career path, or did you just, you know, not get the sitcom that some people get that runs for 10 years and, you know, gives them another life in California?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always easier said than done. I mean, that's like, you know, the mother saying, why don't you go do a soap opera? You know, you have to get the door has to open.
Right.
And sometimes the doors don't open. And, you know, when I left Jekyll and Hyde, I did go to California for a bit and try to make a go of it out there. And I did some episodics. But it's another world in that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing or care. So LA doesn't really know what's going on Broadway or in New York, except for the handful of casting directors out there that really do care about theater. So I go out there and I'm an unknown quantity. So it's really like starting all over again. And I really didn't want to do that. I didn't have the patience for it. So I gave it I gave it some time and I said, I just don't want to do this anymore. And I came back home and, figured most of my work comes out of New York anyway. And I'd rather stay here. And when and if, TV or film comes up, then I'll go out to LA and do that. But I'm not going to actively just pursue that and give up the stage.
But the important thing also is that you're on Broadway enough now, and I guess on a certain level off Broadway, that you make a decent, good living as a full-time actor. Is that augmented by voice work? Do you do commercials? Or is it literally you live off theater and that's all you need?
Well, you live off theater. I mean, there are very few theater jobs that pay you a sustainable living.
Right.
And being on, being in Spider-Man, this is the first time I've been back on Broadway since Jekyll and Hyde. And that's 12, 13 years.
Right.
And I've been making my living in the regional realm, which, doesn't pay a whole lot of money. And I've been doing a lot of, classical plays and, things like that. I've really built up my acting chops and built up my resume with a lot of different varied roles and whatever, but it's not financially fulfilling. So yeah, you have to do multiple things. You have to work like three or four different jobs at the same time. You do readings, you do voiceover work, you try to do commercials, you everything you possibly can to get income coming in. It's not easy.
And since we're talking about, the life and the lifestyle of a New York actor, one of the nice things is that Robert Cuccioli is married to an actress, Lila Robbins, very lovely actress whom you've been... How long have you guys been together?
Well, we're not officially married. Yeah. We've been together for 12 years, so we've been... we're very, very close in that regard, but we're not married.
Oh, well, no, sorry. I think somewhere on one of the internet's things, it mentions a spouse or whatever, but in other places it says that you've just been together. Does that work as two actors should be together because they know the trajectory, they know what it is to spend, your life pursuing that particular calling?
It varies. I've heard arguments for both. You can have a partner that is... you can end up competing with, even if it's a man and a woman. You're not going out for the same roles, but right. Someone's career is doing better than the other. So that can be an issue sometimes. But the good thing about it is that you both understand what each other goes through. So more so than someone that is not in the business, because it's very unique. And, I've worked with different people that are not in Lila's life, and Lila works with many different people that are not in my life, so you just have, it's a lot of trust, it's a lot about trust and everything, and mutual respect.
Did you guys meet doing a show?
Actually, no. We met doing a benefit. Lila had been involved with the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey for many years, and I had done a show there. Enter the Guardsman was my first show with them, and with Mark Jacoby and Dana Reeve, and they asked the three of us to host this gala, and Lila was a part of it. She was performing in it too, and that's when we met, and we started dating shortly after that, and Mm-hmm. We didn't start working together until a good 2 years after.
What is it? Well, what's it like working with a spouse? I mean, you can't leave your stuff at home.
But we.
I'm sorry, not a spouse. You're
well, partner. That's all right. But we sort of do. It's we're practically married. I mean, we've been together so long. First of all, the first time we worked together, we both kind of laid down ground rules as to how we're going to do this, because the two of us work very differently. So it's, we didn't want to talk about work at home, unless it was something that we really needed to discuss, but it wasn't something that we brought home with us, and try not to bring our personal lives to the theater, unless, we're on a break or something like that. But it took a moment to kind of figure it out, but we've worked together 3 or 4 times now.
Nice.
And it's quite easy. We get along very well. We work very well together.
It's kind of like that Olympia Dukakis Louis Zorich sort of pairing, sometimes.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Well, why not,
Yeah.
So we have just a couple more minutes with Robert Cuccioli, who's just been this fabulous and interesting and guest in the neighborhood. You can see him, by the way, on Broadway in Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark. And by the way, I haven't even mentioned this, and I apologize, but this Monday, October 8th, 7 o'clock at Birdland, you're going to be doing a cabaret show called A Standard Love, which is tied in with a brand new compact disc, which is called The Look of Love, which I assume is available from all the usual places you can get compact discs.
It will be. I'm in the process of working all that out right now, but it will most likely be available on iTunes, CD Baby, Amazon. So, and then you can also go to my website to guide you through all that, and that's very easy. That's just robertcuccioli.com.
Robert Cuccioli, CUCCIOLI, robertcuccioli.com for the upcoming CD, The Look of Love, and also at Birdland this Monday. So what are some of the songs you'll be doing in A Standard Love?
Well, they are all standards from the American Songbook.
Such as?
Like Witchcraft, A Fine Romance,
Boogie Oogie Oogie.
What else?
What else? 1970. No.
All of Me, Too Close for Comfort, Once Upon a Time, I Want to Be Around.
Oh, I love that song, Once Upon a Time. Is that from the Apple Tree? Is that one? I forget.
I Want to Be Around. I Want to Be Around to Pick Up the Pieces When Somebody Breaks Your Heart.
Cool. All these songs and more, Robert Cuccioli will be singing on Monday night at Birdland in Manhattan, and also you'll hear a lot of them on his upcoming CD. But I want to hear, since you've been working so much, not only on and off Broadway, but in the regionals, I'm curious about funny stories and anecdotes of things happening on stage, or anecdotes of famous actors that you've met or worked with, funny or memorable stories from 20 years or more in the theater.
Oh God! I don't know. I don't remember any of these things. I'm as bad as remembering these things as I am with jokes.
Oh, okay. Well, if one comes to you, please. Sure. Well, did you have a favorite experience regionally? Like the most fun you had doing a show in a regional theater?
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot. Just trying to pick the most fun is a difficult one. I've had such a great time in many of them.
How about this question? Was there a role that you really learned from and stretched you in a certain way that made you learn a lot, or that you tried a whole different kind of tack of what you're not, you out of your comfort zone as a performer? Let's say.
Well, doing Shakespeare has been, that's been an enormous stretch for me. I got the opportunity to do that at the Shakespeare Theater in New Jersey. After I had done Enter the Guardsman, as I told you, Bonnie Amonte, the artistic director there, had said to me, you know, you can do Shakespeare. Would you like to? And I'm like, yeah, I've been dying to do it all my life. So she offered me Antony and Cleopatra. Antony and Antony and Cleopatra is like one of the largest roles.
I hope she can offer you Cleopatra. Okay, yeah.
So I said yes, and it was just it was terrifying, but it was one of the greatest learning experiences I had. I've gotten better at Shakespeare and more comfortable with it as the years have gone on. But that was a great learning experience for me, and also directing for the first time was a frightening experience and a great learning experience for me, and just stretched me as even an actor, because you, as an actor, you sometimes do things and you don't really know why you do them, but you just go out of instinct.
Right.
But if you're talking to another actor to direct them, you have to use the words. You have to find the words to do that. So it stretched me and improved me even as an actor to direct, because I had to put into words what I do, and that just fed me as an actor as well.
Well, I am so glad that Robert Cuccioli has put into words his thoughts and feelings about being an actor on and off Broadway and in regional theater. I guess the last question for Mr. Cuccioli is, you're in Spider-Man as the Green Goblin for how long, and then what's down the pike? What are your next projects?
I've signed for a year. I'll be in it until the beginning of next August, at least.
Mm.
We'll cross that bridge, you know, when we get to it next year. But after that, I don't have anything set right now. I can't look that far away.
Right. Well,
I would love to do a new project. I like to create new works and new roles. So I'm hoping something like that comes along. In the meantime, I will probably be, you know, I'll be enjoying doing Spider-Man. I'll be enjoying doing one thing for a little bit, but I'll probably be working on another cabaret or another concert in my spare time.
All I can say is that we're lucky to have you in New York or wherever Robert Cuccioli goes to perform and to sing. If you want to hear him sing, remember he's at Birdland on Monday night at 7 o'clock doing A Standard Love, a lot of standard songs from the American Songbook, which you'll also hear in his upcoming CD, The Look of Love, that you can get at robertcuccioli.com. And, of course, he's in Spider-Man as the Green Goblin on Broadway 8 times a week. So it just remains for me to say, Robert, thank you so much, especially on a day when you have two shows. You got a matinee and an evening today, and to take like 45 minutes out to talk on the radio when you have to go use your voice for two shows today, I really appreciate that. I think that's really nice of you.
Yeah, this was an enjoyable day. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, and best of luck. Thanks for being in the neighborhood.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care now.
Bye-bye now. Thanks.
Bye.